Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And welcome to the AEW Rampage Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on Friday night's episode of Rampage. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Rampage, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0. Pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett to review the best show of the week to review, because it's only an hour.
The hour runtime. It's a bit of a treat for me getting a Rampage. Me and Cedric have done a rare swap this week. A bit of a treat for me getting the 1 hour show.
That is from you, by the way.
Oh, Christ, I know. And you know what? It wasn't even what I had to make, Tim. It wasn't even my pass. He very generously offered to do the swap this week. What was he thinking? I don't think much of either show, but I know which one I'd rather watch in the case of buying average wrestling shows. It's the 1 hour one rather than the two. This was, at times, it's all about standards, this game. It's all about standards, and I hold AEW to the highest standard. And I don't think they're fulfilling that brief presently. And whilst there were moments, genuinely, in a one-hour wrestling show that approached real artistic brilliance, there were some that would only be considered artistically brilliant if they were being submitted for the Turner Prize. That's the one where it's like cows cutting half a point for that one.
Yeah.
Like, it's in a bit of a weird space, a lot of AEW's stuff at the moment. Apologies, I'm not going to go over this all again, but it's there in your feed if you want to go back and listen to the Rampage preview. Myself and Michael Sidgwick, in the last sort of 10 minutes of that, sort of lost ourselves in a debate, not a debate because we were agreeing, but a discussion about the state of the AEW mid-card. So much so that, like, and I should be doing this on air, it should be backstage stuff, but we were thinking maybe there's actually a podcast in this because AEW don't feel right, does it?
No, I agree. I've got a weird, it's sort of been creeping in for a while now, in fact. Do you know what I think is what's going to happen? I've mentioned this already on a podcast today. I'm very excited about it, so I'm probably going to mention it in every podcast. It's the work Christmas party tomorrow night, which means on Wednesday, we're going to be reviewing 2.0 with a hangover, a severe hangover, quite possibly, which could be very interesting. But also, that means that our Dynamite preview, which normally records Wednesday afternoon, it's going to become really sort of introspective, I think, because you know, in that moment where you're like, oh, I really need to have a look at myself, like after a night out. Well, we're going to be doing that around AEW. And if you're thinking right now, oh, it's a shame Sig isn't on the Rampage review. First of all, just be nice to Hamflett. It's one of the Dudleys, you know. Could be a lot worse considering some people we got in our office.
This is it. You're still getting your elite tier content.
Yeah, but also, if you want to know Michael Sidgwick's thoughts on AEW, buy his new book, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW. It's available right now, whatculture.bigcartel.com. Right, let's dive straight into AEW Rampage, which I was stunned to see was missing Chris Jericho on commentary. Apparently, backstage attack on Wednesday cut him out of the show, which must be why he was able to fly to Newcastle days before that to go to a Wetherspoons here in Newcastle. Anyway, it's Excalibur Taz.
We have to do this. Did you see, in terms of Chris Jericho's culture tour of this latest leg of his Fozzy World Tour, he's been pictured outside of a Wetherspoons and in Ireland. Want to take a guess?
I'm not going to guess because I'll probably get done for sort of racial profiling. So I'll save my answer till after you tell me what it was.
Why did I even say one, I guess? Because I was potentially throwing you under the bus there, wasn't I? No, he took a picture outside of a Paddy Power bookmakers. A Wetherspoons and the book. Basically, Chris Jericho is living the life I would if I didn't have a job.
Yeah.
I'd go to the bookies first thing, then I'd try and hit Wetherspoons for a breakfast, just trying to like, so like, instead of having a literal pot to piss in, I'd just try and make a tenner last a day and go in their toilets.
Another peeling back of the curtain, which I probably shouldn't do. There was occasions where we were in our old office because there was a Spoons right across the river and it was on the
Jericho's local, in fact.
It is that one that you've taken the photo outside of, yes. That me, Hamfler, Jules was involved in this for a while. We go, if we drag out the sort of post-pay-per-view stuff, we can probably go and get some breakfast together at 8 p.m. before we go to bed.
Oh, God, I'd forgotten all about that. Oh, God. Those blue plates that you just want to fall asleep in and eat your dinner, like inhale it while sleeping rather than sitting with a knife and fork and a cut into a dippy egg when you've not had... would have been on Red Bull and crisps for the last 8 hours.
Oh, I guarantee if Fozzie playing Scotland, by the way, he's going to be getting some battered Mars bars, and I think he's fine for them. Anyway, right, let's talk about this show.
Dipping them in a pint of Iron Brew.
Right, let's talk about this show rapidly. We'll start with the opener. It was the TNT Championship match. Tony Nese and his tiny knees in a handicap match against Sammy Guevara. obviously, a bit of history here between these two. Tony Nese had attacked Sammy Guevara, I think on Dynamite, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. My weeks are all over the place at the moment. Obviously, Sammy Guevara still got those injured ribs from that wild fight with American Top Team on the pay-per-view. Immediately, though, Sammy Guevara, to get his own back, jumped Tony Nese at the bell and nails a twisting tope suicida through the ropes to start us off. And just starts beating up Tony Nese around ringside, chucking him into the barricade, chucking him into the ring steps, all the usual stuff. But Guevara, his injured ribs do affect him, and that allows Nese to catch him with an elevated stomach buster for a nice near fall early on. And then he snaps Guevara's neck across the top rope and then springboard moonsaults from the middle rope for a near fall. Nese is, targeting the quite obvious injury that Sammy Guevara is carrying. A bit like Jay Lethal did, I suppose. He grabs a single leg Boston Crab as we come back from the ads, drives a knee into the ribs whilst he's doing it. Love that touch. Guevara comes back, though, fights back, series of clothesline, double jump, springboard cutter for a beautiful near fall. Counter back and forth between these two brilliantly talented guys. I love both of these. Guevara hits a Spanish fly for a near fall and then a top rope springboard moonsault to Tony Nese, who's bailed out to the floor. But Nese fights back, hits his own twisting tope suicida on the floor and a 450 splash in the ring to get a great two count. He powerbombs Guevara into the corner a couple of times, but as he rushes towards him, Guevara catches him with a leaping pump kick. GTH, 1, 2, 3. Sammy Guevara retains, but at what cost, I suppose? He's selling those ribs brilliantly, in my opinion.
I like the ribs. It's the best bit of the Sammy Guevara act at present, because I'm not sure what else there is to this act at present beyond Sammy Guevara's ribs. I like this. I didn't love it. And I feel as though it's one of those matches that typically we would have said this about some, not all, of the matches in the old era of NXT, where it's kind of impossible to analyze beyond just saying, well, you see that good wrestling you're watching? Well, it's good wrestling. You know, like that. Nothing particularly, well, I didn't feel anyway, other than Sammy's ribs. And it was signposted from Wednesday's Dynamite attack, and we knew it was going to factor in. So they kind of, it was a free pass, really. It wasn't something they needed to build into the body of the match. It was something that was already there. Beyond that, I didn't sense that there was even the urgency or impetus to tell a story. There was just that and a series of very well-executed moves. I love watching Sammy Guevara work as the underdog babyface who is cocky at the same time. I think that's a real skill. And I don't think many people can do that, because like, look at him. Everything about him should be a heel. And yet he has the ability, the knack, to wrestle as this underdog, which works so perfectly in this role. If only you were a little bit more invested in the storylines. Mm-hmm. A lot of this It's funny that you invoked Jay Lethal's name there, because a lot of this mirrored that. Yes, you're watching good wrestling, good moves, etc. But it's just all just happening. It's all feeling very for the sake of it. And this is why we kind of labored on that point at the beginning of the podcast, because we're going to go back to it here. AEW wants you to always look at the immediate, in the case of Sammy Guevara and Tony Nese, the sort of the micro details, mm-hmm. but it wants you to think about the macro too. And what really is Sammy Guevara's TNT title run? Is it just going to be a series of these half-decent, half-baked wrestling matches, whilst the mid-card, and we're going to get to this, Christ almighty, are involved in chaos? A man is on fire on Wednesday night. And does any of this relate to any of this? It doesn't feel joined up at all.
No.
And I just, what saps the passion out of any I can summon for Sammy and Tony Nese is just this feeling of, well, who is, like, are they on a bit of an island, really? Who's this for? Do you even feel that by getting a victory over the Gun Club, Darby Allin's got one eye on Sammy Guevara? Or
does
MJF and CM Punk feel like they're above it, way above it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Kingston, whatever he's doing, feels way above it. This made me lament more on the big picture problems more than it did celebrate the work of the two men. And that's been the subject of Sammy's TNT reign at present. Good stuff, but nothing I'll ever watch again or think about again.
Yeah, and my issue is, there's a separate discussion point all around, you know, Jay Lethal being in AEW, but my issue is that some people that they do bring in as this credible threat to Sammy's title reign is they do stuff like this. I have a great match, really enjoyed it. Knew exactly what was going to happen. I didn't really bite on any of the near falls, if I'm perfectly honest, but it was an enjoyable match nonetheless. What next for Tony Nese? They bring Jay Lethal in, and I haven't seen him since he fought for the title. And people's opinion is divided upon him. But I love Tony Nese. I always felt like they could do so much more with him and those goddamn abs. But it's about how they follow this up for him, isn't it? Rather, if he just disappears back onto dark. Because I love wrestling, love watching wrestling. I watch a lot of it for my job. I ain't got time or necessarily even the desire to watch everything on Dark and Dark Elevation. So if they ain't on Dynamite or Rampage, I'm not seeing them for months on end.
It feels like the best chance you've got. Yeah, when you get a hype, when you're sort of signed with a bit of hype and then you get a title shot and you lose that title shot, as has now happened for both Jay Lethal and Tony Nese. Who knows? Maybe they're going to form a stable with each other. Maybe this is a one big thing, but it feels like you kind of have to be put into a group for you to stand a chance in AEW. You kind of, right, this didn't work. I was overconfident. I didn't respect that when they say all elite, they mean all elite. And I've come into a league that I wasn't ready for. So now I've got to rethink and I've got to recalibrate. And that can work over the long term. I'm not like, the men of the year aren't exactly moving mountains, but Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky weren't really going anywhere. And then they found each other.
Mm.
So you can put people together and it can I was thinking about Tony Nese because he's patter. I was thinking how great it would be if you turned Daniel Garcia babyface and you put Tony Nese with 2.0 and you've got like 2.0 doing boom, look at this one, boom on each of his abs. Just like, off the top of my head. But there are ways in which you can fold a lot of these wrestlers in because you've got such a character-driven roster. But you've now got to do that because he's taking a shot and he's missed.
Yeah.
So that needs recovering now, which is obviously in their plans is to recover it. Sammy Guevara is the TNT title's always been the open challenge belt anyway, but it's not just open challenge. It's not like a warhorse match. This is it.
No, exactly.
Tony Nese and Jay Lethal are in. So it's like, right, what do you actually do with them now?
Mm. What followed was more breadcrumbs in the Christian Cage versus Jungle Boy story that hasn't been told yet. He's cutting a promo. He's got Jungle Boy. He's got Luchasaurus there. They're talking about the tag match in the main event. They're there to scout the tag champions, or at least one half the tag champions, I suppose. And he talks about the role that Jurassic Express has been on. They've been picking up victories. And look, sooner or later, this luck's going to run out. But we're going to try and strike gold whilst we can. We guess you've got these continued lessons that you guys can learn, and I'm there to help you and help you achieve that success. It wasn't anything, this really, was it? And yeah, it was everything.
And these are the standards with which we want to see and expect from everything else, because this was great. This is what we're watching AEW for. This was nothing, and yet it was everything. You can enjoy a bit of glib promo work from Christian for the sake of one segment. You can immediately think about the ways in which this eventually feeds into the turn. This feeds into Jurassic Express versus Lucha Brothers for the tag team titles. This feeds into Christian encouraging them to cheat and not doing it. This is encouraging Christian telling Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus to scout tonight's match. Spoiler, what happens in tonight's match? They pull off Penta's mask. Christian is going to tell them to pull off Penta's mask. They're not going to do it. They're going to lose. Christian's going to turn. And then at some point in the storyline, he's going to pull off Luchasaurus's mask to get to Jungle Boy, because all of the pieces fit. And that's why this is great and so much better than a lot of the long, laborious stuff they're doing elsewhere. Like, and if none of what I've just said happens, a 30-second backstage promo has encouraged me to think of all of it.
And what about in the build to Jungle Boy versus Christian Cage, which for me, probably I'd put on Revolution, because that's a banger match. As much as they want to do TV stuff and they've got TBS and all the, you know, specials they do. I just book for pay-per-views, all right? That's what I do here. What about in the build for Hate Hamlet? Rather than like a mask versus hair match, he has to lose it necessarily forever, right? Not if you get a mask, you can't put it back on. But to win the match, no pinfall, no submission, no count out, none of that bollocks. To win the match, Christian Cage has to rip off Luchasaurus's mask, and Luchasaurus has to put a blue dot mask on Christian Cage's face.
That's incredible. Jungle Boy could even say that, couldn't he? Yeah, Luchasaurus might wear a mask, but if somebody told you, you should have, you ugly piece of shit. Like,
welcome, Tony. Where's that fucking check? It's Christmas time. The kids need presents.
You're not a dinosaur, Luchasaurus. You're a man. And Jack Perry, you've always been a boy. One promo. Like, better than the bulk of what they're doing because of how it makes you think and feel. This is still the great wrestling company.
Yes. Spread
out a bit wider. Spread the net out wider again.
Anyway, what followed all that was the TBS Women's Champion. Oh, no, sorry. Soon to be TBS Women's Champion, Jade Cargill, wrecking Janai Kai, I think was her name. I love the nickname, the Kick Demon, by the way. And she had a great look about her, but she got destroyed in 30 seconds. And that includes Jade Cargill. By the way, this is Janai Kai, the Kick Demon. Apologies if I'm butchering her name there. Is one of Thunder Rosa's students. She joins commentary for this match, and there's a nice little back and forth between her and Ricky Starks before we get into it. But Jade Cargill goes, go on, I'll give you a free side headlock. Kai's like, okay. Pushed her off, pump kick, jaded, 1, 2, 3, piss off. And then post-match, obviously, Jade Cargill keeps beating her up, because so she should. Look at her, put that fucking title on her. And Thunder Rosa runs down, tries to make the save, and then gets this big pull-apart brawl that goes on, and the referees have to separate them. And it's a little bit all over the shop, but this did exactly what it needed to do. And this was the 30-second women's match that we get on Rampage.
Yeah, this was efficient use of time, but I don't particularly mean that in the complimentary way. They are kind of using and abusing the fact that Jade Cargill squashes people to shine a much shorter light on the women's division at large, which is a problem maybe. Not that I want to piss on your chips, and I think I'm with you in the booking, but it is a slight problem maybe if Jade actually wins this belt. Like, what if this, what we got here, becomes a title match? And then the stat is...
Brilliant.
Well, I think if I did get the TBS title match every single week, but they just like got out of filling like 9.5 minutes of TV time because it's 30 seconds instead. Where I think this worked was Jade Cargill looking dominant over a jobber that you might remember. So Janai Kai, it's funny, she left an impression, didn't she, Janai Kai? So I think like long-term, we'll maybe one day see her again, especially knowing that she's Thunder Rosa's trainee and whatnot. That's quite fun. The brawl was sloppier than I would have liked.
I appreciated that as well.
Yeah, it's cute, you know. The brawl was just a sloppier than I would have wanted. Like, Thunder Rosa, we know, I don't know, it's like harsh to say this about Jade Cargill. This is going to be, Thunder Rosa's got a job on here. This is going to be a longer match. This is going to be a challenge for what, like, Jade Cargill is limited. I love her, but she's limited, and that's okay because we're watching her grow and develop. I wanted this brawl to show me that, like, everything's going to be fine. I don't know. I kind of talk about this content and then criticize something that hasn't happened yet. That match might rule. I just didn't think a huge amount of this brawl.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Adam Cole and the Young Bucks cut a promo backstage. Adam Cole is furious. Orange Cassidy interrupting him when he was going to be on commentary. What match for? Who knows? Who cares? The Young Bucks are not happy about their best friends. Don Callis walks in the background of this one. I was like, where have you been? I don't know. Maybe that'll be followed up. They're furious with them and the way they've been acting recently. And they challenge them to a good old-fashioned tag match on Dynamite with any two members who I think they're good enough in best friends.
It's funny you mentioned Don Callis, Will Vaughn. I do think he was there for a reason. And it's typical with the Elite that a lot of the time you have to sit and wait for these things to really show themselves. But as well as Don Callis, did you notice, not for the first time, that Brandon Cutler was getting a bit of a bollocking off the boys for taking his turn the camera off?
He didn't press the red button, did he? He was taking his sweet time, couldn't work out how to turn the video off.
That is not the first time he's let that video run. And who hasn't watched a tape yet? And who likes to talk about what people should and shouldn't see? And why might all of this eventually matter down the road? I just thought that was nice. I appreciated what I thought was something I was supposed to see there for future use.
Yeah, it was a nice touch. And yeah, Young Bucks versus two people in the best friends. Yep, perfect. Thank you. See you on Wednesday.
Yeah, all right. I'll take that. Yeah, it's all right.
We get a recap of Chris Jericho, of course, even when he's not on the show, getting beaten up by the best tag team in AEW. And then we get Eddie Kingston cutting a promo saying how much he doesn't care what happens to Jericho. But as far as he's concerned, I love the way he says the word partner. You reap what you sow, partner. Are they going to be, because both of them have said, I don't care about what you did to that other guy. I'm in this for myself, but I really hate 2.0. They're going to team up, aren't they, Chris Jericho and Eddie Kingston?
Yeah, but can they coexist? That's the big question. Look, they did a match at Full Gear that was a battle of teams that couldn't coexist. And everybody at first thought, what a cool meta gag. And then it literally became a match where teams couldn't coexist. Like that, it wasn't a gag. That was the angle. And we're getting it again here. I don't know what I think of this. I don't know what I can't. I don't know. If I was a Chris Jericho fan, and I love this? Because I can't switch off my cynicism. We've talked about this on the podcast. It's not a secret. We feel like we've seen what's gone on here, which is Chris Jericho's seen like that real main event appeal that is suddenly there in Eddie Kingston and has thought, I'll have some of that. And 2.0, as they were with Punk and Sting and Darby, have proven themselves perfect guys to theoretically be nobodies, but perfect for main eventers to destroy. So the combination looks almost too cute from our point of view. But if you're a Chris Jericho fan, do you want to see this? And do you want to see Jericho and Eddie Kingston interact? And is Eddie Kingston still kind of bitter about CM Punk? And is he going to snap and turn on Jericho? Or is this all to lead to a Jericho turn for if and when Moxley's ready to return? I don't know what I want from this. I know what we're getting. We're definitely getting Kingston and Jericho versus 2.0. That's happening. It's going to be...
They'll lose that, obviously, 2.0.
Well, naturally, yeah. They'll be the dual chew of the week. But yeah, that'll be a probably like... That'll be a Rampage main event or something. But I don't know where else this goes beyond that. I can't quite yet see how the rest of it fits together. Are the Inner Circle still a thing?
I've no idea.
Jericho's got four other mates.
What's more of a thing right now? The Inner Circle or the Pinnacle?
Oh, yeah. Don't know, brother. I'm not sure the Pinnacle's ever been a thing.
Right, we get a nice preview setting up John Silver taking on Bryan Danielson on Dynamite this week. He says Silver, he's just shooting on him here. Silver's 30 and making jokes. When I was 30, Danielson says I was winning world championships. I also like the line, you become the five people you spend the most time with. Does John Silver spend his time with elite people? He's so good at this, isn't he?
Very nice. Am I you? And have I met John Silver's parents at some point in my life? Because I've got bloodlust to see somebody's child get absolutely destroyed. I am absolutely drooling at the prospect of what Bryan Danielson is going to do to John Silver. I know that sounds cruel because everybody loves Johnny Hungy and all those fire-up spots.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But some people you do just want to see in your fake sports.
Especially with John Silver's flexing and Bryan Danielson's penchant for flexing recently.
Oh, man. Like, do you know what I want Danielson to do? I want him to do one of them submission moves that involves riding Johnny Hungy so that he gets to be Hangman Page as John Silver used to carry him around like a horse. Or like Danielson used to get on his back and wrench in a choke or something that's like Johnny Hungy caught, like tries to horse up, but he's just knees buckle lower and lower. And then Brian whips him with his hand like he's a jockey or something.
He's literally flogging a dead horse at the end of the match.
Exactly that. Can't wait. Cannot wait.
Bit of a tangent here, and people are going to laugh. See what happens when Sidgwick isn't on an AEW review. Guess whose birthday it was yesterday?
Go on.
Owen Steens.
Oh, is it?
He's 14, a.k.a. the perfect age to electric cherries. Get that in AEW.
I wondered
why. Can't escape it. You think, oh, it's not a WWE podcast. He won't talk about it there. Surprise, motherfucker. Yes, I am. Right, well, we do know, yeah, main event of AEW Rampage. Well, actually, before that.
It's all right. You say you're dropping in an electric chair reference in this one. In about 3 weeks, Cody will work a one-man chamber horrors match where he'll shock himself. So it's all, we'll bring it there instead.
So I was going to say we got the main event. Before we got the main event, of course, we're meant to get some sort of promo. What we actually got was Mark Henry going, I ain't going to wrestle with an eye patch. And then it just this shouting match to the point that Mark was like, everyone shut up. I've got to say, sounds like there's been enough talk. It's time for the main event.
You got something in your soundboard that's like, sounds like it's a bit too much talk, quite honestly.
This is the only issue with Sid not doing the Rampage review because we have to do this on Zoom. I can't use the soundboard. And I'm not going to put it in post. We're too busy today. It was Penta El Zero Miedo and Pac versus FTR. See, just said it normally. Sidge isn't here to get wound up, so it's no fun if you.
I've never heard it any other way. I don't know exactly what you're referring to.
We start off with Cash Wheeler and Penta, who are just so good together, obviously. Pac tags in. And Wheeler gets hit with a double basement drop kick. Pac, when Harwood comes in, hits him with a beautiful high back body drop. Penta does that double stomp to Harwood's, I mean, it's meant to be tailbone. It's an ass kick, isn't it, basically? Wheeler comes in to break up the pin and FTR double team Penta to get the advantage. Pac comes in, looks great, and then goes for a springboard and trips over his own feet.
Great, that. Like really, really great selling. We're having a giggle. Like absolutely inspired selling.
Yeah. Loved it. Forearm from Harwood off the back of that. Wheeler gets Pac in a cobra clutch, but Pac fights out of it, sends him to the floor. But Hull, I just sometimes FTR do stuff. And I know some people are hot on FTR and some people are negative on FTR. But I just, they make me fall in love with tag team wrestling every time I see them when they do stuff like this. So Wheeler gets chucked out to the floor. Dax Harwood just chucks his partner back in the ring when he's clearly just sort of out of it. But that's because he can just pull him back in and go, right, tag ref, right, I'm in now. I just love it. But anyway, Harwood gets hit and then Zaguri. Pat goes to tag Penta, but Wheeler's recovered and pulls Penta out to the floor. They hit that demolition, decapitation elbow thing of theirs that gets a near fall. But Rick Knox, by the way, the Young Bucks referee. Whoa. We're playing by the rules here. Which one of you is the legal man? What are you doing, Rick? You never pay any attention during a Young Bucks match. I've never seen you do a 10 count on the outside on a Young Bucks match. But all of a sudden, oh, which one of you is the legal man? Did you see if they did a tag or not? You have no idea. Anyway, I've gone off topic here. Anyway, Harwood goes for a superplex with Pac. Pac fights out of it, though. Shoves him to the mat and hits a nice shotgun dropkick. Always love that from Pac. Again, Pac's going for the tag. Wheeler tries to cut him off, but Pac backdrops him, gets Penta. Penta comes in, sling blades, chops. Everyone gets a bit of something. And he hits that. I don't know what the move is, but that move where he hits a move on one of FTR and flips into a DDT on the other member of FTR, which always looks so good. He's all over the place, Penta, here, and the crowd are absolutely loving it. Backstabber on Wheeler gets a two count as well. He goes for a package pile driver, but Wheeler manages to counter it, and he holds Penta up in this wheelbarrow, the lovely tribute to the Midnight Express, I've been reliably informed, as Harwood comes off the top with a leg drop. That gets a near fall. Penta hits a corkscrew code red for a two count as well. Pac gets the tag, crossbody, but Harwood rolls through, gets a near fall off that, and Harwood hits a tiger driver for another two count. Tully Blanchard gets up on the apron. He's not happy about the referees counting on that last fall. Pac and Tully collide, but Pac gets a near fall with a roll up and a bridge off the top of, off of the back of that. Wheeler hits a DDT on Penta on the floor. Pat clothesline Dax Harwood to the floor and moonsaults out there. And he's got the match won. Pat is setting himself up to finish off Harwood on the apron. But out of nowhere, Malachi Black comes in, mists into Pat's only good eye. And Harwood rolls him up. He can't see a bloody thing. Gets the pinfall victory. Post-match, FTR rip the mask off Penta as they celebrate, and Pac is, you know, writhing around on the floor. He can't see anything. Black attacks him again and gouges his eye, his other eye, out. He blinds Pac basically and holds up a sort of green and red tinted hand. The green's all the mist, spooky bollocks that he's got, and the red is the blood of Pac. Amphlett, what did you make of all this?
Remember in the summer when I kind of like pleaded with our listenership, if you are a wrestling fan and you are not watching AEW, do. This is what we all watch this for. The highs don't come along all the time. And the high after high after high of a really great Dynamite. I know Sidgwick likes to go back to, I think it was like March 2020. No, that would have been when the pandemic started. February 2020, just before the pandemic, obviously. And that Rich Vein of Fawn he loves. The one for me was absolutely sort of July through to about September, when I just found every inch of AEW to be completely unmissable. Then it was in the richest vein of form. And as this Rampage ended, all I could think of was, it's out. because a good match, not a great one still, I don't think, but a good one, went a bit long. I felt it still a bit dragged a little bit, but it was...
That's fair.
It was better than the other Lucha Brothers FTR matches, which again, I think was helped by the weight of expectation being lowered by the cancelled 2 out of 3 falls match. I think everybody sort of accepted, oh, well, this is not going to be what we were hoping for. And as a result, I know I certainly did, went in not being pleasantly surprised. I mean, they're all awesome, but just thinking, well, I don't know what to expect now. And instead what we got was Pac's really, really luxurious selling. Like, he can't see properly. So of course his high spots are going to be trickier. You know, he's selling body parts as well as his eye. Really, really loved watching Pac work this match and think through how his current circumstances would change what he would normally bring to the table. Mm-hmm. I like FTR being the dicks they are, trying to work Pac up into being as angry as the Lucha Brothers have been, because Death Triangle are a unit and they're like, we've got to use the double team you highlighted in particular, but we've got to, like, we've got to do these things to try and niggle at Pac, because his mind's elsewhere. Let's see if we can bring him in and force him to make a mistake. And in the end, obviously, he doesn't really need to, because he gets attacked by Malakai Black. I don't like the eye stuff. I don't like Malakai Black's own eye makeup. It's weird, and I thought he looked lame. Like, he's there supposed to be, he's got the blood on one hand, he's, you know, he's, was it, there was a bit where he was sat cross-legged after the attack by the guardrail before he, was it before he came back in for the beatdown?
I think so.
He looked like a fucking clown, man. Like, just, I know it was all very theatrical, but where is the guy in the fight shorts that booted Cody's head off on night one?
Yeah.
Where's he gone? You know, it's like, these are the intangibles. That's a vibe, and you either see it or you don't. And I'm just not seeing it currently. Pac being blind might offer us the greatest ever blindfold match in wrestling history. Like, if they somehow, like, arrive at a point where, so Pac has now got poison mist in both his eyes, yeah? So he can't see. And the question will be, well, can he ever wrestle again? What can this man do? This man that takes flight for a living, if he can't trust himself to leave his feet, you know, like, if that's the Pac story. And then Death Triangle come to his, you know, the Lucha Brothers come to his aid or something and gouge one of Aleister Black's eyes, and Malakai Black's eyes, in a revenge attack. And as a result, a blindfold match is deemed the fair, you know, the fair way to have this match. Could they have the best blindfold match ever?
Possibly. Quite possibly, yeah.
But is it something that you're that jonesing to see? Really?
Yeah, like, because Malakai Black will lose and go, yeah, but I got what I wanted, which was you to have a blindfold match.
Now, let's see how long it is before you set yourself on fire. Because I've been known to impact people in different ways than pinning their shoulders to the mat. I don't know why he speaks a little bit like Mauro Ranallo, teeing up a wall game. I don't know. I just thought this was a decent match with... I thought the beatdown was a fat load of bollocks, I gotta be honest. And I just, I'm not buying it. It doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel earned. And everybody in this crop feels like they're spinning their wheels at the moment.
Yeah, I just thought at the end of it all, probably should feel more for this, as a man's been blinded. Yeah.
Maybe, like, the obvious generous, I'm not saying this, I'm just saying you could have this argument. WWE ruined this because they literally took a guy's eye out and then it was like, I'm fine now. Like,
yeah,
if they all but teamed together pretty much nearly on, like, the Survivor Series, like, the, you know, it's like, shouldn't we hate each other a lot more than we do? Like, is it the point that, like, everything has been trivialized, that none of this stuff feels very serious anymore? But I don't want to give AEW the passages for that. I don't think this is particularly good pro wrestling, and they're capable of a lot better.
I'm just so excited to see how they follow this up, because, oh, it's a roller coaster with Malakai Black. I think it's the nicest way of saying it.
In a room, left alone, agony. So when you're in agony, you scream, right? And he just looks to nowhere. He's not even looking at the camera. That's a nice little thing, because he doesn't even know where the camera is. A camera's been invited in. And he goes, why? I. And that's what this is all for.
Well, let us know your... I'm wrapping up there. Let us know your thoughts on AEW Rampage on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. What I say, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. You can pre-order Michael Sidgwick's book, as I said right now, WhatCulture.BigCartel.com, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Our review of NXT War Games is available. We're going to be reviewing SmackDown today and looking ahead to Monday Night Raw later on today. But for now, this has been the AEW Rampage Review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.